good with like picking up sound.
Okay, I think it should be running now. So I'm Tara Burke, and do you want to introduce yourself?
I am Leah Cruz.
Okay, so should we just go straight in with the interview?
Let's go, yeah.
All right, so my first question was, why did you decide to join the military?
Honestly, I have considered the military since I was a child. I grew up with three brothers, okay. And my dad, he was a typical, like, American, like, working on cars and trucks and drinking beer, so I had thought about joining the military as kind of like a way of showing my strength.
Nice.
And a leadership opportunity. Okay. When I was in middle school, I had a poster from the Army. It was a terrible recruitment poster, but it had a female in uniform climbing up like a rope ladder, and it said something motivational like, oh, nothing can stop you or you can do it. But nobody in my family was directly military, so this was something kind of like novel for my family. I don't know.
Fun.
But I did join in 2009,
okay.
When our economy collapsed, because I was working at a bank at the time.
Oh, wow.
And trying to go to school out of my own money. So I was working full-time and then going to night classes. And the closest college, because I lived in a really small town, was a half-hour drive.
Yeah.
So I would work all day and then drive a half-hour to my night class and drive a half-hour back. It wasn't fun in the winter in Maine because snow and gas was high, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when the economy collapsed in 2008, I think it was, the bank took my full-time position with benefits and cut it down to just 20 hours with no benefits. And so I had been trying. I've been thinking about joining the military, and it's always been, like, an option for me, but it wasn't until that moment where I was like, I can't afford to live and go to school. I need something else, and so that's when I called the recruiter.
Wow. And then how did, like, your family react when you did that?
My brothers were a little taken aback. They're like, what? You're such a hippie. Like, why would you join the military? And then my mom was a little upset, like any mother would react, and she was like, I have three sons and my only daughter wants to join the military? This doesn't make sense. And of course my dad was like, yeah, it's a great idea. You should definitely go.
Nice.
And yeah, and he's a fisherman, so he was like, oh, go Coast Guard. Coast Guard is awesome. And I was like, I get seasick, so probably not.
Fair.
And I had an uncle who did 20 years in the Air Force, and he was like, hey, if education is on your priority list, the Air Force will take care of you. And I was like, all right, I'll take your word for it. So I called the Air Force recruiter.
Oh, wow. So yeah. You picked, that was your MOS, like you like didn't want to go into any other branch of the military? Like,
not really. My uncle did a pretty good job. I mean, he wasn't a recruiter. He worked intelligence. So he was a really smart man. I didn't see much of him growing up, but I heard stories.
Yeah.
And so when he like sat me down and he was like, hey, like no joke, the Air Force will give you good hot meals,
nice.
Clean beds, and they will value your pursuit of education. And I was like, okay, that's all I needed to hear.
Yeah. And yeah. Is that how it worked out? Like, did you...
Yes.
Was everything you expected?
It was, and it was a little bit better, actually. I find myself as one of the success stories of being a woman in the military.
Yeah.
So I was lucky in the sense that the Air Force really promoted professionalism. And then I was doubly lucky because I worked in the medical, I worked in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I was surrounded by not only the professionalism of the Air Force, but under the secondary professionalism of working in a hospital and working directly with patients and working really closely with officers and doctors and just a really welcoming and caring and like equal sense of just a sense of community, environment, and belonging, which, yeah, I really enjoyed the Air Force. And it's unfortunate that some women who have military experience can't say that.
Yeah.
So I'm very blessed.
Did you have, like, any experiences where you felt like you're definitely, like, a woman in the military? Or, like, was it just, did you just always feel like you were just another soldier kind of thing?
There was, when I walked into my recruiter's office, and he saw, because before you can join the military, you have to take the ASVAB.
Okay.
I don't know what that stands for, it's another military acronym, but basically it's like the SATs of the military. You have to take a test, and they look at your scores, and they see like, oh, these jobs would probably work best for you. He looked at my scores, and he was like, oh, you should go into medical. who's like, a lot of women that walk into my office, they want to be medical. And I actually wanted to be intelligence. Okay. And I was like, what, you think just because I'm a woman, you think I want to be a nurse or something? And so I was like, no, I won't be medical, but it turned out that way. So lo and behold, here I am. And I'm not disappointed about it. I was at first when I was like, oh man, I'm medical, but now I'm so grateful that I got the opportunity.
Yeah.
But other than that, I did not feel excluded in the Air Force. It was actually really inclusion, like, I don't know, it was just the way that they made everyone in the uniform capital A airman. Everyone is a capital A airman. Doesn't matter what your rank is. They say that, but rank kind of matters.
Okay. But that's good.
Yeah,
was there, like, an experience where you, like, explicitly remember being like, okay, like, this is something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life, or, like, just, like, a really vivid memory?
Oh, yeah, so many.
Okay. Nice.
Like, in what regards? Just, like, good, positive?
Yeah.
Because,
like, it sounds like it was such a success story for you.
Yeah, yeah. There was one time I was E2, which is, like, you have your E1 through E10. So E2 is, like, just starting out.
Okay.
And we had a commander's call. And so that's when the whole squadron gets together. And we basically, like, I think it's once a month, whole squadron gets together in a big auditorium, and we talk about the mission, we talk about things that are going well, things that aren't going well, and, like, the bigger, like, national agenda.
Okay.
And how that pertains to our particular squadron.
Okay.
And so there's, like, 1,000 of us, and that's, like, doctors, everybody who works in our squadron.
Yeah.
And my chief, the E9 of our squadron, comes up to me, and she goes, Airman Cruz. I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she's like, we had a speaker today cancel, and we need you to go up and speak. Yeah, I was terrified.
Wow.
It was about
a big thing to drop.
Yeah, it was so last minute, and I didn't even know. Nobody told me about it, but yeah, last minute cancellation. It was about the base's outdoor rec center and, like, how we should be utilizing the outdoor rec, because it was in Las Vegas.
Fair.
You don't typically think of Las Vegas as being, like, an outdoor.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Center, because everyone goes to Vegas to party, but it's actually situated close to Arizona, the Grand Canyon, LA, and all these hiking places, the Mojave Desert.
Yeah.
And so the outdoor rec was kind of a big deal. And so she's like, oh, you like the outdoors, you've used their sources, you're gonna go up and you're gonna encourage our airmen to utilize this source before it gets cut by budget constraints. And I was like, terrified. She's like, you can go sit up front by the commander and we'll cue you in. And I was just, like, sitting there, just, like, my heart was just, like, beating. I'm just like, oh my gosh. But I did it. I went up there and I just, like, said everything that I knew.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, probably just stuttered like I am right now. But then afterwards, my supervisors came up to me and people were like, good job, like,
yeah,
for E2, like, that was great. So that was, like, one of my experiences of, like, stepping up and just being put in a super uncomfortable position.
Yeah.
Of leadership.
Awesome. So you said you went to Vegas. What was, like, your reaction when you found out you were gonna go there? Like, do you remember?
Vegas was, like, I told you about the dream sheet of, like, 1 through 10. Vegas was, like, my number 6 choice. I had, like, all overseas choices. My uncle that I told you about before, he had been stationed in Vegas and retired out there. So he's like, yeah, we actually went out in 2001. Or no, year 2000. It was the year of the millennium, Y2K.
Nice.
We went out to Vegas to visit him.
Oh, okay.
And so he showed us the base when I was 12 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then I got Nellis, which is the base in Vegas. And I was like, cool, I've already been there. So I was pretty excited.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous, too, because I came from a really small town in Maine with one stoplight. My whole high school was 200.
Okay.
200 people.
Wow.
So going from my little tiny hole-in-the-wall town to Las Vegas was terrifying for the first 6 months.
Yeah.
Just driving. There's no, like, one-way streets or curved streets. All the streets in Vegas are straight grid lines.
Yeah.
So
did you find it hard, like, adjusting?
I did. The first 6 months was, like, not knowing anybody, no family around there, driving, yeah, it was hard adjusting, but that was one of the benefits of, like, having great supervisors and great people to work with, was when I showed up at work, everyone was like, hey, Erin Cruz, welcome to the team, let's show you around, nice. We'll show you the ins and outs. So it was, like, it was a sense of belonging, but, like, not at the same time.
That's fair. And how was it coming back after you'd been in Vegas? Did you go straight back home?
No, I haven't been home since Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I separated, and then I stayed in Vegas for about a year, and I worked on my associate's degree in, like, a community college in Vegas. My boyfriend was still active duty at the time, so I hung around for a year, just went to school full time, and then I went to Oregon, because my parents had moved out to Oregon after I left, because... Oh, it's kind of a long story. My mom is from Oregon. My dad is from Maine. Okay. They met, because he's a fisherman, they met when he was fishing here in Oregon. They fell in love, and then they moved back to Maine because that's where he's from. So I grew up in Maine.
Okay.
But then they moved back to Oregon because my grandparents are older now, and my mom wanted to be back with her parents. And, it was. So that's why I'm here in Oregon right now, is because now my family is in Oregon instead of Maine. I still have my dad's side of the family in Maine, and two brothers. Yeah, brothers, nephews. I have family on both sides of the country. Nice. Yes. So I moved to Oregon after I got out, and it was again kind of hard adjusting, because even though my family's here, it still doesn't feel like home. Like, that's, I don't know, like, the back roads. I didn't grow up here.
Yeah.
But it still kind of feels like home.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's, like, a very big divide between, like, kind of, like, civilian life and, like, military life? Or, like, do you feel like it was just the same? It was just really the state that was different for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think for me, because I think it's going to be different for everybody, because everyone has a different experience. Yeah. Big... Oh... The pay was nice. I didn't have to worry about my bills, and the work, I felt like I had a higher sense of purpose in what I do, belonging to something bigger than myself. But yeah, when I was active duty, there of course was a big divide. Like, I would walk in public and kind of carry myself a little differently, like, knowing that if something were to happen, especially being medical, being a licensed EMT, licensed CPR, ALS, like, I would just always kind of have my head on a swivel a little bit.
Like always be on guard.
Yeah, like, I have to step up, like, to protect if anything happens, or if I see a car accident, like, I am that one, like, leader, unless there's a doctor who's handy, like...
Was that, like, 24-7? Like, even, like, when you weren't kind of, like, on base?
Kind of, and it's, and it's still now, because as a reservist, I still have my EMT license, my CPR, everything, and then just kind of how you have the image of the military member, like, being more ready, more prepared to handle a tough situation. So if there's something were to happen at the school or during class or something, I automatically, I think I do it subconsciously, but I will sit in a certain place in the classroom to where I can see, like, the exits and the entrances, or make sure that if something happens, like, I am, like, ready to get out if I need to. It's kind of subconscious, but I don't like sitting directly up front if there's no doors up front.
Really?
It's kind of just having that situational awareness of, like, know how many people, know where the closest exit is, and it's different. So this is a difference between, like, being on campus and active duty. So on campus, I was like, where's the security guards? Like, because it was interesting, because on bases, you have a wall. Like, you have to get through a gate, you have to show your ID, like, guards with guns, like, checking your ID, making sure, sometimes checking your vehicle, making sure nobody...
Every
time. And so when I got to campus, I was like, there's no gate, there's no walls, and to just see, like, a homeless person just walk through, I'm like, that's a potential security risk, just anybody can walk through. And then also in the military, you're not allowed to text and walk at the same time. So just seeing everybody texting and walking, I'm like, that's a safety hazard, too. And there's some, like, stupid stuff that I still find myself doing. Like, standing with your hands in your pockets when you're in uniform. That's against AFI, which is Air Force... AFI, jeez.
I could be with you.
Anyway, it's just like the laws that they said. I should know the acronym. Wow. But yeah, you can't stand with your hands in your pocket in uniform. So now even when I do it today, I'm just like... And then I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not in anymore. I can do this.
And did you never have that awareness before you went into the military?
No.
You went in and then you just got trained and like that just became like more of a habit.
It's weird. Oh, and another thing is like before I went in, I would sleep with my hair down.
Okay.
Now I can't do that because in basic training, you have to go, since you don't have time in the mornings, you go to bed at 10 and then you wake up at 4:45. You don't have time to do your hair in the morning. So you would do your hair at night before you went to bed. So you would do like a high bun and loads of hairspray, so much hairspray, and you'd have to sleep with it. And it was terrible because you have like this big bun.
Yeah, I imagine that's really uncomfortable.
It was really uncomfortable. But now I can't sleep without my hair up. Not in that bun, but like just up, like out of my face, because I'll wake up in the night and be like, oh, my hair's in my way. So like,
oh wow,
different weird habits like that.
Yeah, that's so strange.
Yeah,
I would never have thought of things like that.
Yeah, those are some differences between active duty and
that's fair
here now.
Yeah, yeah. Looking back on like that experience, is there anything that like you would have wanted to change, or like I don't know, something
particular? I would have saved more money.
Okay.
Because I totally understand the broke student thing now. Like,
fair.
It was nice being active duty because, like I said, the money, it wasn't great, but I didn't have to worry about checking price tags. I spent a lot of money for my first year there because I was 22, so I was of drinking age, and it was Vegas, and I'd never had, like, that experience before. So it was, like, every weekend for the first 6 months I was down at the Strip.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, but I didn't save a lot of money, so
fair.
That would have been one thing that I would have changed.
Yeah. Did you do much traveling, like, around Vegas, or, like, did you not have, like, that much time off?
A little bit. There's Mount Charleston, which is an hour drive away, that has snow year-round, people think Vegas is the desert in southern Nevada.
Yeah.
But, yeah, get a 1 hour drive and there's snow. There's a bunch of hiking places, a lot of good camping sites. Went to LA a couple times, because that's like a 4 hour drive.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
When you were like part of the military, do you have like, how does like time off work? Like, is it like you are on for like a certain amount of months and then off, or like how does that structure work?
For my experience, I was one of the lucky ones working in the hospital, working in a clinic. Okay. So we worked like 6:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, it
so
was
it's like a regular job. Almost.
Yeah, and we had our holidays off for the most part too. So 4th of July, we would get a day off. So it was a really
perfect.
It was a really nice, clean cut schedule.
Were you able to like travel like back home and stuff, like when you had like holidays and stuff?
Like back to Maine or Oregon?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. You would have to request leave. And just request time off like you would any civilian job. So, yeah, I feel like somewhat of an anomaly when I do this kind of stuff, because people say, you know, I feel like some people, when they think military, they're like, oh, yeah, overseas, you're packing a gun. And I'm like, no, actually, that's not my experience at all. I was really close to a civilian job, actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but we got training that you couldn't get in a medical civilian. So I don't even have, like, a civilian equivalent to what my job was. Like, so they trained me to be an EMT. Okay. They gave me my driver's license to drive an ambulance if I had to.
Oh, wow.
They trained me to do combat medicine or pre-hospital trauma. And I got to do amazing training. We built a hospital from the ground for a week.
Whoa.
We had, like, the guys who do, like, the heating and air conditioning come in. We had lab people who, like, run the lab machines, x-ray technicians bring in their machines,
okay.
Surgeons come in, and then the medics would come in, and we built, like, a temporary, like, a tent hospital, like, in MASH, like, from the ground up, and that was an amazing training.
Whoa.
And so we would do, different medical scenarios, drills that we would have to run through, and they threw like a mass casualty on us at the end of the day is like the test, or the end of the week is a test, like, hey, you guys are going to get, like, 20-plus patients. Be ready. And oh, so, yeah, and they're like, you guys are operational. So after they trained us to do all of these different things, like, the final day was the test. And that was in Texas. And then I did combat training, or combat medical training in Baltimore, Maryland. Okay. And that was 4 or 5 weeks long at the University of Maryland in their trauma center, because they have, like, one of the biggest, busiest trauma centers in the whole United States.
Whoa.
And so we got to do a lot of hands-on patient training, cadaver training. Yeah, it was fun, but it was also intense, too, because even though I worked in a clinic for most of the time,
yeah,
I still had to know the skills to where if I did deploy,
yeah,
I would have to do, like, life-saving combat intervention with limited resources.
Yeah.
So now that I'm a civilian,
yeah,
I don't really have, like, I was a little bit EMT, combat medic,
yeah,
nurse, medical assistant, CNA. Like, oh, I could work anywhere in the hospital. And that was one of the cool things about being a medic in the Air Force. Be like, oh, do you want to practice drawing blood today? All right, head down to the lab. They'll let you draw blood. In a civilian hospital, you have to have, like, a phlebotomy license. You have to go through special school just to do that.
Oh, wow.
Air Force is like, eh, just make sure somebody's supervising you. And you can literally try anything.
Oh. What was your favorite thing about, like, about training like that? Like, what aspects of it did you like the best?
The constant learning. And I think that's why I'm still in school, is because even though I was in for 3 years, like, I was learning something new every day, it seemed.
Yeah.
And then we were also at training hospital, too.
Okay.
So they would send doctors, PAs, and even my job as a, it's called a 4N. They would send brand new 4Ns, and we would train them. So it was constantly having people coming in and out, training and learning.
Yeah.
And so by the end of it, I was teaching. Like, sometimes there's even PAs. People would be physician assistants asking me questions as the technician. I'm like, ah, yeah, you'll get this eventually.
Wow.
So,
Sounds amazing. It sounds like such a good experience.
It was. It was a great experience.
Was there any bit of, like, the training where you were like, okay, I can't do this? Or, like, was there anything where you were like, okay, I'm ready to quit?
Toenail removals.
Gross.
Exactly. Yes. So with toenail removals in the procedure, when you have an infected or overgrown toenail, they take a needle and they have to anesthetize the toe. And then they take a mini, no joke, it's like a mini spatula. And it's called a spatula. And they just drive it right underneath the toenail. Oh. And then they lift it up. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Just because, like, right now my toes are curling. I'm just like, nope. I would step out. I would find another technician. Be like, you got to help the doc out on this one. I can't be in the room when this happens.
Nasty. So,
yeah.
Oh, gosh. Wow, that's good.
Yeah. But other stuff, vomit, diarrhea, blood, that doesn't bother me. It was just the toenail removals.
Yeah, fair. And would it be on patients that had just kind of come in from, like, Las Vegas? Or, like, would it be people that they'd fly in? Or, like, how?
A little bit of everything. So the hospital that I worked at in Vegas was on Nellis Air Force Base. It's one of the biggest bases in the country. And it's home of the United States Warfare Headquarters. So it's a really busy and it's a really political base because there's a lot of big programs there. And so we would see active duty. We would see active duty in their dependents, so their children, their husbands and wives.
Okay.
And then we would see retirees as well. People who have done 20 plus years in the Air Force decided to retire in Las Vegas, so they would still have access to the base and the facilities. And then we also, before the hospital diverged from the VA, we were also seeing VA patients. And those were patients who were receiving VA medical benefits versus TRICARE medical benefits.
Okay.
So we saw a little bit of everybody. We saw pilots. We saw security forces, which is the police.
Yeah.
We saw children. So you really had no idea who was walking through the door. And sometimes it would be the commander, like the really high up. So you'd get, like, a nudge from the supervisor and be like, hey, heads up. Like, you got a big wig. Yes, VIP.
Was there, like, a range of medical conditions as well? Or was there, like, some, like, really prominent medical conditions that would generally come in?
So it depended on a lot of the retirees that we had suffered from what most of Americans suffer from, which is heart disease, stroke, other metabolic syndromes like diabetes was a big one, and diabetes management, hypertension, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, a lot of lifestyle-based diseases, chronic illnesses. But with active duty, it was definitely a healthier base. With active duty, we got a lot of, like, we called it sick call. So if you just had, like, a cough or a sneeze, or you didn't feel good and you felt like you had to call out as sick for duty that day, you would come and see us, and we would write you, like, a waiver for, like, a PT test, which is a physical fitness test, if you sprained your ankle or something.
Okay.
Or if you just couldn't perform your duty at work anymore. So there was that. And then kids, it was basically just sniffles and earaches and stuff.
I bet those are the easiest patients to deal with.
Actually, they were terrifying.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yep. Kids, they terrified me because basically no kid likes to go to the doctor. So you're seeing that poor child on, like, what they think is the worst day of their life. And they just, like, look at you with fear, and you're just trying so hard to be the good person, the nice person, like, here, have stickers. And so, yeah, I remember one time, because I worked in dermatology for a year, and there's a lot of needles in dermatology, because we do a lot of biopsies and stuff, and kids, because I would be the technician to do the numbing. And so with numbing, you have the needle full of lidocaine, and you don't stick them once like an immunization. You stick them over and over again until that area is numb. And so they just hated you by the end of it.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I did not like working with kids.
Shame.
Yeah.
And then, so did you just decide to leave when your contract was done?
Yeah, I only signed up for 4 years because a part of me was kind of, my brothers called it being a hippie, but I was more on the liberal side. Like, why are we in a persistent state of war? But at the same time, I admire what this country was founded on, freedom of speech and freedom to pursue happiness.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what, that's something I can stand behind, even though I don't fully align with the bureaucracy of it all.
Yeah.
So I forgot the question.
When you decided, you just left, and you
I signed up for the minimum, which was 4 years for Air Force. It's different for every branch. Yeah, and after my 4 years, I decided, you know what, I want to try school now. Like, after my 4 years, you get to go to school on the GI Bill, and so that's where I'm at now.
Okay, cool. How long have you been here for?
This will be my second year.
Okay.
Yep.
And are you studying to be a doctor still, or?
I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to stay medical, but now I'm thinking I've taken up a lot of philosophy classes.
Oh, nice.
And I'm thinking about more of the big picture instead of direct patient-to-patient care, because when I was in, I actually got really frustrated of how patients who needed a little bit more than a pill, like our chronic illness, like diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, it's like they just wanted a magic pill.
Yeah.
And that disappointed me in a way, because the doctors, the patient, the physician-patient relationship has changed to where the patient will go to the doctor for help, and the doctor basically tells them what to do. Now it's kind of shifted where the patient goes in and tells the doctor what to do. Like, hey, doc, I want this medication. Yeah. I want you to do this for me.
Basically going in for a prescription rather than, like, advice.
Yeah, and the doctors now are so afraid of getting sued that or having their ratings go down that they'll just do what the patient wants. Sometimes this isn't every doctor, but it is a pattern that I've seen. And so now the patients are kind of, I don't know, it's interesting. This is why I've taken philosophy classes. And so now I'm thinking about going into medical law or medical administration or public health, and kind of like looking at, instead of the bottom up, like top down, and be like, all right, let's figure how to improve this. It's not super efficient.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't know, what time are we at? Okay. I think that's all I really have to ask you. I guess thank you for your time in the military and your time with me here today.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm glad that you had a successful story.
Me too.
Especially being a woman, I feel like that was
it's kind of a breath of fresh air. Definitely. Especially, I don't know if you've heard what's going on with the Marines right now, how they had a Facebook page that was solely... So what they did is they had this secret Facebook page, and it was just filled with pictures of naked women, like revenge photos that exes would put on there, and it was to serve the male Marines. And I feel like there is a problem with sexual harassment because it's such a male-dominated... So I feel like sometimes women are apprehensive to join the military because of that problem, and not that they should be, you should be aware of the risk of anything before you enter it, whether that's military or college or whatnot.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I didn't have that in the Air Force. I was really lucky, and it saddens me to know that I am not the majority. I am the minority of women who can say, I'd gladly go back in, no problems.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing, definitely.
Yeah.
Is there any, last things you want to say? In particular, want to mention? Sorry to put you on the spot.
No. There's so many things that I want to say, but knowing that this will be public and will reflect the university and reflect myself, I'm like, nah, I'll plead no comment for right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, again, thank you for your time and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate you coming and talking to me.
Same here.
So, just pause it.